A carnivore diet refers to the consumption of animal-based foods. People who follow a carnivorous dietary pattern eat almost exclusively only meat and other animal-based foods. And you're about to learn everything about it. Welcome to Carnivore Today. All things carnivore, ketogenic living, and metabolic health. If you're looking to shed those extra pounds, reduce your dependency on prescriptions, or even heal metabolic disorders, we've got you covered. It's all about the latest research, success stories, and we'll give you practical tips to help you thrive on your wellness journey. And we're also here to quell some misconceptions about it.
What about fiber? Won't I explode without eating fiber?
Fiber is not necessary.
I'll get fat eating all that fat.
No, you will not.
I'm not going to have any energy because no carbs.
You'll have more.
I'm going to have a heart attack from eating all that red meat.
False.
Carnivore Today, where your health journey begins. Now your host, Adam Lacy.
I'm very excited to talk with my guest today, Laura Russell. Laura, for those who are not familiar with you, can you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I am a registered nurse. I've been doing that for 21 years. I did keto for 28 years. And now I am a carnivore person. And so that is my lifestyle.
Awesome. 28 years. Wow. That's that's quite a stretch. So is it 28 plus four or?
28 plus four. So it's actually been over 32.
So over 32 years, you have been effectively in ketosis, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What is that like? How does that feel?
You feel like a superhuman. You feel like you're 20 still.
That's awesome. So what age did you actually start eating?
I was
ketogenic?
20.
20?
Yep, I was 20 years old. Yes.
Okay. Did you have any health issues or what? Why did you actually start eating keto back then?
So I was morbidly obese at 19. Actually, I was morbidly obese, went to my family doctor who he had only been out of medical school about a year. So he was about 110 pounds soaking wet, you know, and, the only thing he said about my eating, you know, Doritos were fine. Ice cream, cottage cheese by the pound was fine. Just don't do real butter and only egg whites and turkey bacon. So being the good patient, I did that. Mm-hmm. And at 20, I had just had my daughter and was even heavier, had my lab work done. And I wasn't a nurse at this time. So the lady drawing my blood, she drew my blood. You know, they have you look at the tube where your name's on there to make sure it's the right. And I said, what's in the tube? And she's like, what do you mean? I said, well, what are those white pieces? And they were just on top of the blood laying on the side. And she goes, oh, that's fat. It looked like Crisco.
Wow.
I know. And I was like, oh, boy. So a week later, I saw the physician and he was like, well, got this newer medicine. It's been out for just a few, you know, year or two called Lipitor. And he goes, that's what we're going to do. And I said, well, how long do I have to take this? And he's like, well, for the rest of your life. And I remember sitting there and I was just like deflated. I'm 20 and I'm going to have to take a pill for the rest of my life. And I said, I don't understand. I've been eating your, I was kind of snarky at this point. I'm like, I've eaten your country crock. I've eaten your fake eggs. I've eaten your fake bacon. And I was like, it's miserable. And I said, and it's not working. And he was kind of, I was snarky first, so I guess I deserved it. But he literally looked at me and said, well, if you're not willing to do this, you know, as he's writing the script out and he hands it to me, he says, then you're just going to die a fat ASS.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think that would go the same at my age now if he said that. Yeah. So that really, I remember I left there, I sat in the parking lot and I thought, I'm not going to be living out of bottle, you know? And I thought, you know, my grandmother was really big on gardening and hunting and fishing and coal packing. She'd made it through the Depression and the only way they had meat was if they hunted. And she cooked everything in bacon grease and lard. And I was like, I just think that makes better sense, you know? So I went to the library that we had in town and I grabbed every medical journal, every book I could find. Most of them were like from 1850 up to about 1910, which is anybody who's done any research knows that's prior to when our medical schools were hijacked by the apothecary families and the petroleum families. And I spent weeks, you know, because Google wasn't around yet.
Right.
And I spent weeks reading and everything was nutrition, you know, and I thought he doesn't give a damn about the nutrition part of this. And so I went home and I cleaned out my pantry. I threw out everything, white bread, potatoes, pasta, rice, new everything, no sugar, no anything. And I did just whole foods. So some vegetables, but I've never been a big fan of vegetables. You know, you have to cover it with something to make it taste good. So why? But I did leaner meats than I probably should have. Mm-hmm. So I did that and it worked pretty good for about 26 years. And the last 2 years of keto is when the keto craze really kind of hit and everything was keto bars and Quest bar, you know, yeah. And make everything with coconut and almond flour, make it look and taste just like the real deal, which I could do. I was pretty good at that, mm-hmm. but it didn't make me feel good. And I actually started having joint and pain, cystic acne, depression, anxiety off charts, which I had not had, you know. It made it very hard when I went through nursing school, knowing nutritionally what I knew to be true. Mm-hmm. And I can remember the nutrition lady, instructor, she was talking about kcals. This is how many, this is the thermal that you have to get to. And I was like, I said, well, what inside our body gets to that temperature? And she was like, well, you don't have to. And I'm like, well, how do you guys come up with those numbers then? And she was like, I just don't know. And I was like, you know, that's kind of what I was like. Just regurgitate what they want you to say, get out of the class and go on and do your thing. So mm-hmm. that's basically the keto part of this journey.
Wow. That's incredible. So let's rewind back to when you had first started, you were overweight at that point and you went keto. So what was your transformation there? Cause obviously you're not overweight anymore.
Yeah. I lost 140 pounds in 9 months. And to even go back further, when they did my labs, my triglycerides were 1,000, and that's as high as their meter went. Ooh. I'm sure it probably was higher than that because I remember the lab lady coming out and she says, well, we only spun it once and it's already to 1,000. And I was like, I didn't know anything. So I was like, is that good? And she was like, that's not good. You know, and I was like, okay. And I think my total cholesterol was over 600. I called the hospital a couple of weeks ago and was like, do you have my original, any of these labs? And they're like, 32 years ago? And they're like, probably not. And I'm like, dang it. And I said, okay. But anyway, when I went back at 9 months to have my labs done, didn't have the Crisco, you know, or the country crock inside the tube.
Right.
And my triglycerides were 33 or 35. That's about where they run all the time. And my total cholesterol was at 200. And I was like, good enough. You know, I just didn't want to become diabetic. Because at that point, when I went back to see him, of course, he was patting himself on the back. Because that Lipitor had done the trick.
Right.
And I mean, that's the first thing he said, are you going to thank me? And I'm like, for what? And he was like, well, he's like, I told you, he says, this is just a miracle drug. And I was like, I didn't take it. And I had the script in my hand. And I said, I'm ashamed of you. I was like, here, you're a medical doctor. And I came to see you. And you gave me, the only advice you gave me was to take this medicine that I didn't take. Mm-hmm. And I said, I did this on my own. And I told him how I did it. And he was basically just that I was stupid. So I gave him back his script and I politely fired him.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And I mean, he said, congrats on the weight loss, but not after he found out that it wasn't his Lipitor that did it. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had 5 years after I had my daughter, after I was 20, I had my son. And I, of course, I was working in a really hot, heavy factory doing a lot of it was pretty cool work, but it was hot. So I didn't gain a lot there, but I really never, ever put any of that weight back on.
That's awesome. What challenges did you have that in the last 32 years, specifically in the keto area? Did you have any challenges at all?
Well, actually, I think if they'd have left keto alone and quit with all the bars and all that stuff that they do, I feel like it probably would be okay for a lot more people to do. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't have a lot of trouble those first 26 years. It was just when all the junk came out that they're trying to make it taste and look the same. That's when I had trouble. And really, it was family and friends. That was the hardest part in the very beginning, because they know me and I'm an all or none personality. So I quit everything the day before Thanksgiving in 91, because I said, if I can make it through these holidays, I've got it made. And I just did it. But yeah, I would say, you know, when you go out to eat with people, that was kind of hard back then, because there was nothing. You couldn't ask for something to be cooked in butter. You couldn't, you know, people just didn't do it. And it was seed oils everywhere, you know, because this was the early 90s. Mm-hmm. So it was seed oils everywhere. So really, I got really good at cooking all of my own food and just not going out and finding other ways to be sociable than going out to eat. So that's kind of what I did with that.
That's awesome. So after you started, you seen these positive results. Is that what kept you going? Was how you felt?
Yeah, I felt really good. You know, I didn't have any brain fog, and I didn't have a ton at 20 anyway. But, you know, when you get on those sugar binges, then you do have kind of that lethargy and stuff afterwards. So it helped with that. Everything. I didn't even have to exercise, you know, and I'd lost all that weight. Mm-hmm. So that was good. And I don't know. Like I said, I'm just an all or none personality. So when I say I'm doing something, come hell or high water, it's going to get done, you know? So I think I just was like, I'm doing this against the grain and I'm going to keep doing it, because if it worked for me, and then a couple of my friends, you know, saw that and they started doing it, and one of them had lost over 150 pounds and kept it off. So I just felt like this was kind of what made sense. I didn't really like a lot of vegetables. Didn't really care about bread anymore anyway. You know, after you're away from it for so long, I was like, I don't even look at it the same. So I just kind of looked at it like skull and crossbones, like stay away from that. So that's kind of how I dealt with it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I look at like a tub of ice cream the same way. Sometimes I'll actually even write that on the package in the freezer, and it's not my ice cream, but I'll put skull and bones on.
Yeah. Like, go ahead and enjoy this if you want, but you're going to pay for it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So fast forward 26 years, and you started eating some keto treats and things, right? And developed depression and some other
anxiety issues.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I really got into doing the different baking with like the almond flour, you know, the coconut flour and stuff, using the alternative sweeteners and even stevia, which I grew myself. I grow my own spearmint and peppermint to do my toothpaste and stuff like that. But I did that and developed really, I had no acne as a teenager. I was a very fortunate person. But I did develop that cystic acne that females get that's hormonal related around here. Mm-hmm. I started noticing joint pain and like just tightness in my hands. And like I do kickboxing, I do turbo fire. I love that. And run. I have a treadmill that I'm one of those people that I do hang clothes on my treadmill to dry, but I use my treadmill. So it's not just a clothes hanger. So do that. And I just noticed that I'd get sore and it would take longer to get better. My allergies, I had sinus all the time. And I did kind of figure out, I was doing keto cooking, you know, live on Facebook, and I had done away with all the milk, and I knew I was lactose intolerant. My dad is 3/4 Cherokee Indian. It just kind of goes along with them. So I knew, but I liked it. So I kept doing, you know, cheese and stuff. So I'd went about a week without doing any kind of milk products at all. And then we did a cooking show where we did the broccoli cheese soup that was keto. And I literally took one bite of that. And I didn't even notice it myself. I went to sit down on the couch and I think we were watching football. And my husband says, "Why are you sniffing again?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "You don't even hear yourself?" Because my nose. And I was like, "Rap." And I was like, "All right." And that evening, so this would have been 28 years in, I saw Joe Rogan and he was talking about that. And I was like, "Oh, I could do that. No vegetables." I was excited. And then I dug into like Michaela and Jordan Peterson. Mm-hmm. And then I had already watched some of Dr. Barry's stuff before. Mm-hmm. And so I went on there and I was like, oh, and he was about the time he was starting to be like keto bore, maybe some carnivore, you know, and start going into the science behind it, which I'm a nerd. So I love the science. So I was like, yes, let's dive in. So that's kind of where I transitioned over to the carnivore. So that's it for me. I love it.
Awesome. So once you did that transition from keto to carnivore, made that, you know, you took the plunge, both feet in, ripped the Band-Aid off.
Yep.
What did you notice after you had done that?
So within just the first few weeks, the allergies were gone. Maybe a month in, not one breakout. The joints completely fine. I decided to integrate some weightlifting. I thought, you know, I'm getting close to 50. It's time to start, you know, I had always done like the kickboxing, which is good to lean you out, but it's not going to really bulk up any muscle. And I thought, well, I don't want to, you know, women and everybody, as they get older, they get sarcopenia where the muscles break down. And I was like, I don't want to end up like that. And, you know, you see these people when you work in healthcare. And I was like, nope, not going to do it. So I did a really strenuous workout, didn't stretch out before, didn't warm up. And I thought, boy, I'm going to pay for this tomorrow. And I was not sore in the least.
Nice.
And I thought, oh, okay. So, yeah. And then I've lost, I think, I actually, the first 2 months, I gained 10 pounds. And I was like, you know how women are. We're like, the number on the scale is so important to us. And it's what we are and who we are. So she went away. I threw away the scale. And I just said, I feel better. I have to believe that this is just part of me healing. Mm-hmm. That once I get, you know, the oxalates, you know, dumped in and get this inflammation off, that this is going to get better. So I do see a lot of people that are like, well, I gained 5 pounds. And I'm like, you're healing. How many years did you abuse your body? And so I just stuck with it. And the allergies are gone. Depression, anxiety, I was able to get off of those medications. And I was on about a medium dose. I mean, I could have went up quite a ways, but I was on a medium dose of venlafaxine, which is Effexor. I think I was on the 75 milligrams, so it can go up to quite a bit. And I weaned myself with, I told my doctor, I said, I'm weaning myself off. And she was like, okay. And I'm like, just let me try and let's see. And yeah, that was probably at least 2 months in that I was able to start to try, yeah, titrate those down, and threw those out and said, I need that diagnosis taken off of my sheet, please.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that is incredible. So
yeah.
How long had you been taking that medication prior to carnivore?
Probably 2 years before. Yes, 2 years before. So basically, it kind of feels like it started about the time I integrated the keto treats.
Okay.
And the sweeteners and all those, you know, things that Quest bars that are not keto, Atkins bars, those are not keto.
Right.
I don't care what the label says, you know. That's kind of when I developed that. That was also kind of the starting of, not really the starting of, but I had changed a job, and that was probably a little bit of it too. And then, of course, you know, what came not long after that, and in healthcare, that was a blast.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So the hardest part of that whole debacle that we had, I was actually weaning myself off during that time. And so I was like, I can do this. And I was just able to manage better, I think. And so I was able, my doctor's like, are you sure this is not the time with healthcare workers? I'm like, nope, I think we can do this. So that's what I did.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you've been a nurse for how long now?
Just over 21 years.
Okay. 21 years. So,
yeah.
And you've been effectively in ketosis for longer than that. So
long time.
You've had some opportunity for evangelism, if you will.
Yes.
So do you have any stories or insights into that, you know, where you've shared this lifestyle with someone else?
Oh, yes. So actually, even in nursing school, when I went back for my RN, I was a licensed practical nurse and then went on a few years later to get my RN. And, you know, everybody in my class is taking ginkgo biloba and all this other stuff, but they're drinking the Pepsi and eating the Snicker bars. And they're like, well, you always have energy. And I was like, I don't need caffeine. I don't need sugar. And they were like, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm keto at the time, you know, so I had started to integrate a little more fat, like your coconut oil, MCT oil, stuff like that, into tea and things. And that just turns the brain on, you know, and that's what I did. But once I became a nurse, when I really started using my knowledge of keto, ketovore, and carnivore was when I worked in the cardiac cath lab. So those are patients that are either have had an MI, are having an MI, or we know they got blockages that we need to put stents in. And, you know, you'd go over their discharge. This is the diet they want you to do. And I'm like, and I'm looking at them and they're like, what? And I'm like, I'm going to write a menu up for you. So I actually made up a menu. I told the cardiologist I worked with, I said, I'm going to write up a different menu. I was like, the nutritionist has got these people on, like, I don't even know how many carbs a day. I mean, it was just a ton of like, oatmeal, cereal, breads, just crazy amounts. And well, they need to worry about that if they're diabetic. And I'm like, no, they don't. That causes inflammation. That's going to clog the arteries. And I said, then calcium gets stuck and everything. And they're like, okay. So they kind of just are like, we'll just shut her up and let her do it. So I made a bunch of copies and different recipes and stuff up and gave them out to them. And could see, you know, good benefits from them not having to come back to us. But my best one, I have a 74-year-old patient that I had who diabetic, has been diabetic since he was 50. And by the time I got called to come see him, because I do home health nursing, he had already had an amputation below the knee. And we were taking care of him with his new stump. And I knew his wife. I had met his wife. She's a retired nurse, but I had never met him. Very nice gentleman. And we were sitting there and I'm looking at this wound with staples in it. And, you know, you look for a good color in that area. And I already could see dusky color. And I'm like, oh boy, that's not getting blood flow. And I was like, and I'm very honest with my patients. I'm not cruel, but I'm honest. And I was like, I don't like the way this spot looks. You know, I'm very concerned that you're going to have to go back in, lose more tissue. And he's a truck driver. So he can get a CDL still if he can have, you know, a prosthetic that's below the knee. But if it goes above the knee, that's it. You're not going to be able to drive, especially being your right leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, I want you to be able to drive the truck, you know, because here we're in the grain belt. So he drives a grain truck all the time. And I said, well, what does your blood sugar run? And so he had a CGM on, so he taps it. And he's like, well, I'm at 400 today. That's good. And I was like, what? I said, well, what were you before? And he goes, oh, it usually just reads high. I said, well, that's a problem. I said, because we want you to heal. And the best way to heal is to have that blood sugar as low as you possibly can. And so I kind of said some things about I would dump this, not full on carnivore, but probably keto, more like half the amount of bread that you were doing, try to do better quality stuff. And he was like, okay, totally like right over, which is okay, you know. And I went back a week later and I was like, you have to go back down. They're going to have to do more surgery. And so they did. And I knew his surgeon. And I was like, I know what he's going to tell you. He's going to tell you if you don't do better, we're going to, the next time you come down here, we'll go above the knee. And so I come back in to see him after he had his debridement where they just took some of that tissue and was able to close it up. And he goes, okay, what do I have to do? And I said, are you willing? And he goes, I'm willing. And his wife's sitting there with a notepad. She's like, let me know. What do I need to do? And so we made him pretty much keto-vore, which I was like, that's better than nothing at all. He was really happy to be able to eat a lot of meat and butter and stuff like that. So when I first got him, he was 10.9 for hemoglobin A1C, which is bad, but I've seen 15.
Wow.
So it can get worse. Mm-hmm. Within 3 months, he was down to 6.7. Nice. I was just blown away. I was like, can you imagine if you went carnivore, you'd probably be like in a 5.
Right.
He went down to see his specialty diabetic doctor, and the nurse in there was super happy. You know, she's like putting happy faces on there. She's like, so good. I'm glad you've done this. And the doctor came in, and him and his wife were sitting there, and he's like, well, yeah, I mean, good for you, but I really like my diabetics to be around 7.
What?
Yeah. And his wife is quieter than I am, and she listened to him for a minute, and then she says, I don't understand. When I was working, we always wanted people to get to 5.6 and below.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, he won't be diabetic. Okay.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah. So then I saw them the following day, and she says, I just can't believe he said that. And I said, well, there's two reasons. I said, one, if you get to a certain level, they can't prescribe you the medications. And at a 5.6, you can request that diabetes to be removed from your diagnosis codes.
Mm-hmm.
He's a specialty doctor that's a diabetic doctor. He can't see you at that point, and he can't charge Medicare $900 for a 10-minute visit.
Right.
I said, he doesn't want to let you go.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and it's up to you. But I said, I think you can personally get off of insulin and the metformin. So I said, but it's up to you. You know, I can't make you do it. And so he says, nope, we're going to keep going. And so 3 months later, I was able to get him discharged. And he went down and had blood work done. And he was 5.6. And he got to fire his doctor.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's driving truck. I see him every so often going down the road. And I was like, there you go. That is somebody that, you know, it took a little prompting for him to be willing to do it, but pain's a big motivator too.
For sure. Yeah. 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 The pushback that you get a lot of times, at least from what I've seen, is just the addiction to the sugars and the carbs.
Yeah.
They don't want to give them up.
They don't. Yeah. It's just like you would expect if you saw a heroin addict, methamphetamine, and being a nurse, and, you know, when I worked in the hospital settings, you would see that same thing, the same kind of actions, the mannerisms, and the anger that they throw toward you when you try to do that to somebody. So, yeah, a lot of people would just rather take the pill and not worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always figure, even when I have patients, and I have some that I shouldn't say this, but there are some slugs in the world that they're happy just sitting in a chair and doing absolutely zero, and they don't care. And even young, I mean, I've seen them in their 50s, but they still get to hear my spiel. You know, I'm like, I'm still going to throw, I'm going to cast it out there, and it may not catch this time, but it's in there somewhere. And maybe, you know, maybe. And I've had people that years ago when I worked in during COVID, I worked in the COVID unit in a nursing home. And I just recently had one of the physical therapists, she reached out to me and she was like, hey, these were my numbers. What do you think? And I was like, oh, and it was like her carotids. She had had Doppler done. And she was like, what do I do? And I said, well, you're not to the point where they need to go in and roto-rooter. And I think this can be turned around. But I said, you've got, and she goes, I know. That's why I call on you. That's why you tell me who to follow, who to watch, you know. And I was like, I named like 60 people. And she was like, can you cut it down to like 5? And I was like, oh, I guess, yeah, that's probably a good idea. But even, and that's maybe, I think maybe 3 weeks ago, she reached out. And just Saturday, she sent me a text message saying that her blood pressures have already dropped over 40 points just by changing that. And she did go carnivore.
Okay.
And she was like, I cannot believe how much better I feel. And, you know, the thing is when you went through it, like I didn't get keto flu when I went carnivore, but I got it when I went keto back then because I didn't know about electrolytes. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, you can say, hey, make sure you've got Redmond's Real Salt, Celtic Salt, what, you know, LMNT or whatever, mm-hmm. have those things available and do that. So that's kind of nice. And plus, I think people are willing to listen to you when they can see what you used to look like and how you've been able to do it.
You know? Right.
Yeah.
Incredible. So let's shift gears for a minute. And you work as a nurse, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So let's kind of go through what you eat in a day, but do it from the perspective of on a work day. So if somebody in the healthcare field is out there and wondering, you know, how am I going to do keto or carnivore? You can see what that looks like.
Super easy. And actually, one of my cath lab patients that I had years ago was like 380-pound truck driver. And he was like, you can't do keto on the go. And I was like, oh, yes, you can. And I wrote up a thing for him and he come back. He was about a quarter of who he used to be. And he was like, you can. And I just told him, if you can pull into a parking lot to a McDonald's, you can pull into a Costco and go to just the outside aisles too, which is what he did. Yeah. So basically, I'm a prepper planner. That's my personality, a little OCD-ish. Mm-hmm. And so Saturdays and Sundays is when I kind of prepare a lot of stuff. I will do hamburger in bulk. I will do steak bites. I cut up ribeye fat bites, but basically like today I was like, I knew I wasn't going to eat breakfast. I did my sprints today and I was like, I don't really feel like eating. I'm not hungry and I don't have really big hunger cues anymore anyway. I just don't eat in this way. Mm-hmm. So some days I'll do OMAD where I eat once a day. Sometimes I do twice a day. I just kind of listen to what my body is telling me, you know? So most days it's one meal a day. Sometimes it's two, but I will, if I'm going to eat like today, I did a porterhouse and I just cooked it with some ribeye fat in a cast iron skillet. I cut it up, put it in a glass container because I don't like to reheat in plastic and cooked it very, very rare because that way when you reheat something, it's not shoe leather.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do that and I do lion. I've done lion for over 9 months, which is the easiest for me. I feel my best doing that. But for people who are carnivore, that do all the different types of meats. You can cook up chicken, you can make bone broth and throw whatever meat you want into your bone broth. One of the ladies that does Meaty Mondays with us, she does it like an egg dropped soup with her bone broth. And I was like, oh. And so there's so many things you can do. I think it just comes down to being a planner, which I'd say a lot of people in healthcare probably are a little bit that personality of where they plan ahead. I don't think most of them just, you know, slide by the skin of their teeth. So I think if they just, you know, hard boiled eggs, you know, you can do jerky, you can do, some people, I'm cheap. I'm not going to buy carnivore crisp. I make my own. But you can make hamburger patties. You can make meatballs. And people can do cheese. Everybody's like, you never talk about cheese. And I'm like, I don't do cheese. But if you can do cheese, you know, I think the hard cheese is probably the better, the more aged it is.
Mm-hmm.
But any of that kind of stuff is very easy to do. And even on the go now, if you go to most of your truck stops anymore, you go to their little vending machines. They've got cheese, they've got eggs, they got pork rinds. So those are things that are really easy to do. And if you keep yourself busy, especially when you're transitioning to this, you're not thinking about food because you keep yourself busy and you're full. So I just tell people to make sure they do enough fat, because I think that's the number one thing that I hear people. They're like, I'm not sleeping and I'm tired and I get hungry. And I'm like, then you're not eating enough fat. You might be eating a lot of protein, but I think, and everybody's fat protein ratio is different. And mine changes day from day, you know, depending on what I'm doing. But I did a video on making those ribeye fat bites, because those are, oh, they're so good.
Sound like,
well, you guys
like them.
Had them, you had them with Maggie, right? Didn't she make some ribeye fat for you guys?
Yeah, it's just, there was no meat in it. It was just fat trimmings.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, yep. I was like, holy cow. At first I was like, I don't know about this. And then we ate some and I'm like, this is actually tastes really good. And it felt really good after we ate that.
Yep. Yeah, I actually have a butcher, and I mean, we get most of our meat from a local farmer, but we do have a store called Fairway down here. And I have a butcher that I'm friends with, and I've been buying the fat that they cut off of the ribeyes. And I've done that for a long time, because I'll grind that into my deer meat or the canned. When I can it, I'll put some in there. But I cut those up, and I'll cut them up in little, almost like popcorn size. And sometimes I do them in a cast iron. Sometimes I do them in an air fryer. In the air fryer, they really crisp up. And you put that salt on there, and those are better than, I can eat those and just forget the steak. Sometimes I'm like, no, you need a little more protein in there.
That's awesome. So you mentioned deer meat. Do you actually hunt?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I've been hunting for since 1977.
Nice.
So a long, long time. So every year, I live in Illinois, so not Chicago, but I live on the other side. I'm West Central Illinois, so closer to Iowa and Missouri. But we have lots of deer. And they're very well fed deer. So we get deer every single year. And this year we're going to have a couple more seasons actually coming up the end of December and the first weekend or second weekend of January, so we can fill more tags if we want. But I generally shoot does just because they taste better than bucks. And then we process it all ourselves. I'm very much into thanking God for taking an animal. So to me, when I go hunting, whether it's bow hunt, shotgun, muzzleloader, doesn't matter, I feel like, you know, I'm taking an animal and I'm going to utilize it. And I do. I utilize almost every single part of it. Like this year, we got a huge doe. And I was like, I had already been grinding up calf liver and mixing it in with the deer meat and regular hamburger. Because I cannot eat liver by itself. I just can't.
Yeah, me neither.
I can't. And so I was like, I know it's so good for you, though, that I wanted to integrate it. So I've been doing like 2 pounds of calf liver to like 10 to 15 pounds of burger. And you can't taste it when you do that. And I mix ribeye fat with it, of course. I think if you took my blood now, it'd be like ribeye fat with a little hint of deer. But this year when shot the deer, as I'm still dressing, and it always looks like somebody's done surgery because I'm like, you know, a nurse. And so I was like, and I was like, and there's the liver and oh, both kidneys. I'll take the kidneys too. And, so that's what I did. And I ground that up. And it was really good. The kidneys are amazing to have mixed in with the hamburger. And I don't know if you've ever heard of a restaurant chain called Maid Rites.
Oh, yeah.
I think it. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So I took care of the owner of Made Rights at the hospital years ago. Okay. And he says, you want to know the secret to my Made Rights? And I was like, I've never had one. And he goes, you've never had one? I was like, I don't eat bran. He goes, well, you can get a cup of Made Right. And I said, oh, I didn't know
really?
That.
Really? I didn't know that. Yep. Oh, my gosh. And I'm going tomorrow.
Yeah. And he said, you could have done that. I mean, that was way back then. I mean, it's been a long time. And I said, are you sure you want to give me your secret? And he goes, yeah. And I said, okay. I said, I'm not keeping it. I'm telling people because if it tastes good, then I'm not. And he goes, that's okay. He goes, it actually is up at one of their restaurants that, down at Quincy, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And he says, we grind kidney, heart, and liver into that meat.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
And so
delicious.
Yes. And so that was it. I a week later, of course, after I saw him and there was a Made right by the hospital down there in Quincy, I went and got one and I was like, that is really good. And so then when I did this deer the other day and I ground it together and stuff, I was like, I'm going to fry up one and just see. And I did it hamburger patty instead of the broke up. And it was exactly, I was like, he wasn't lying, but it wow. was good. Yeah.
That will surprise my wife for sure.
Oh yeah. And I mean, you wouldn't know it because you can't taste the liver, right. But I think if you do it, if you do the liver to enough of the hamburger, and I think probably adding in some of the ribeye fat helps too, because that makes everything taste better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, but yeah. And when it comes to like our meat, we do all of our own processing and we don't have anything fancy. You know, we just have a garage that's mediocre at best, but we hang the deer. We let them hang for quite a while. And then we just start taking it off the bone and working it up ourselves and cut steaks. You can cut roast. When I'm done, the deer looks like a skeleton, and that's about it. I don't waste it. So, yeah.
Okay. Very cool. That's awesome.
Yep.
So you hunt, you cook ribeye fat bites, and so does anyone else in your household eat this way?
My husband does not. My children are both grown. My oldest is 32 and my youngest is 27. He does not. He's cool with however I want to eat. But he eats kind of with the seasons. And it works pretty good for him. I don't even know how to explain. I mean, his family's from Ireland. So I don't know. He's just one of those people. I have a keto mojo. And years ago when I was checking my ketones, I also had the blood strips. I would eat broccoli and my blood sugar would jump 300 points.
Ooh,
which wow. Might as well have been eating sugar. I just converted it so quickly. He can eat a big baked potato and he'd go up 30 points. And I'm like, how?
Wow.
How can that be? But with that being said, he still eats whole foods. So like we have a huge garden every year. We do our own potatoes, onions, tomatoes, everything, anything that you can grow in a garden. And he does eat that way, follows the seasons. Like in the winter, of course, it's more meat heavy, fishing. We do like fishing. He ice fishes. I'm not going to ice fish anymore because it's too cold.
Right.
And I do think I get colder now than I used to. But then there's times that I'm also warmer than I used to be. So I don't know. I'm mm-hmm. not sure, but I do think I get colder easier. So it was pretty cold yesterday with winds at like 40-mile-per-hour gusts. And I was like, they're like, it's 30 degrees. And I'm like, well, what's the feel like temperature? Because it's not 30.
Right.
Yeah.
You're 1-0.
Yeah. And I think it said it was 3. And I was like, yep, that's about what it felt like was 3 degrees. So, yeah. So it's pretty simple, though. He was a bachelor when we met. He was 49. I was 40 when we met. Mm-hmm. And, so he'd been cooking for himself for a long time. So, and with my job, sometimes I'm nights, you know, back in the day, I would work night shifts. Sometimes I was all over the place working. And so basically what kind of how we've devised it is If there's something specific, meat that he wants for supper, he sets it out. Or if it's I'm thinking about it, I'll set out a main course of being meat. And then if he wants something on the side, I mean, if he reminds me and says, hey, will you throw this in? Okay, I'll do that. It doesn't affect me. I can make regular cookies for people. I always am like, are you sure you want to eat these? Because this is really poison. And they're like, yes, we like our poison.
Right.
I'm like, okay. But it never did bother me to be around other people that were eating that way, because it's just my personality. Once I've set my mind, I just dig my nails in, and there's just no, I'm not changing. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's awesome. It sounds like you've had a lot of success, and it sounds like you're going to continue with eating that way. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's one reason I have lots of jars on my thing here. I think I have over 150 jars of different canned coal pack. I should say it's called coal pack because you have to pressure cook meat. But I have done that because I'm a prepper mentality anyway. So I have stuff that I would never eat. I've got raisins up there. I've got rice, sugar, coffee, alcohol, all the things. Because I'm going to barter if I have to.
Right.
And then I do a lot of holistic makeup, my own things. I make up tallow lotions, deodorants, tooth powder. Going to do one here coming up on shampoo that is made with natural ingredients. But I do a lot of like castor oil and different like elderberry and different things that you can use holistically. So I have that kind of stuff as well. And then I'm a big proponent. So I have self-defense stuff as well.
Nice. Awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
That's almost the perfect segue into my next question, which is actually it's not. But so obviously you're female. And
yep.
I kind of wanted to touch on female complications or issues.
Yeah.
Did you ever encounter anything like that?
I did. Yeah. Okay. So, had my first child at 20, second at 25. Both were C-sections. The first one was a traumatic emergency C-section. The second one was more of a planned within the last 2 weeks to do. So with that, having a scar inside of the uterus, it causes a lot of trouble. But I developed fibroids. And so at 34, my doctors were like, we're going to do a hysterectomy. And I was like, well, can we leave my ovaries? Because I'd like to have some hormones and not grow a beard yet, you know? And he was like, okay, well, now what I know, metabolic disease, fibroids, of course, you know? So when I was doing keto and was starting to, you know, watch these people, I was 49. And I knew menopause was coming, because I know you don't know this, but your wife would know that when you ovulate, you can tell which side, which ovary is ovulating. You have a just a distinct weird sensation, and you know that's what's happening. And so it was happening less and less and less. And I was like, okay, well, my mother and all of my aunts and my grandmother, they had horrific menopause, took 10 years, constantly hot flashes. I mean, just, and a little crazy. And I was like, I don't need to be any more of that. So I said, I don't want to do that. So I knew enough. I knew what cholesterol did in the body because of going to nursing school. They do teach you what cholesterol does, but then they demonize it for the other three quarters of school. But I knew that cholesterol started all of, you know, your a lot of your hormones, your testosterone, estrogen, all this. And I thought, well, what that would be a perfect way to level those off and see if we can, you know, counteract that. So that's what I did. And probably a year and a half into it, it would have been around 2020. I went to bed one night and I had a hot flash. I didn't know what a hot flash even was because I'd never had one. And I thought, at first I was like, do I have a fever? You know, being a nurse. And I didn't. woke up the next day, felt fine, and that was it. And my mother was like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, and she's 76 and just within the last year was like, I don't have any more hot flashes. And I was like,
oh my goodness. Uh-huh.
But she's not willing to give up the bad food. Mm-hmm. And which is very tragic, you know, because she has seen me my whole life and seen what I was able to prevent. And she has osteoarthritis. I mean, she's had about every single joint replaced that you can. And I'm like, Mom, that's metabolic disease. You know that. And she was like, I'm not giving up good food. And I'm like, it's not good. It tastes good, but it's not good. Mm-hmm. And so that's always hard. You know, I go with her to her appointments and stuff. And we actually had her up at her orthopedic surgeon. And we were talking about a knee replacement or a hip. I don't remember which joint. And she goes, well, she's a runner. She's 51. And you could just see the dollar bills just in his eyes. And he goes, oh, well, do you have arthritis? And I said, no, I don't. And he was like, have you had x-rays? And I was like, no. And he says, well, what if we gave you some x-rays just to check, just to see if you have the starting? Because now's the time to know, because she had already had replacements by that age, by the time she was 51. And I said, well, how about we finish my mom's appointment? Because that's why we're here. Because at that point, I was like, you're kind of annoying me a little. So we finished the appointment and he leaves the room. And I thought, end of that. Okay. Got ready to leave. And he was sticks his head in and he goes, don't forget. He's like, we got x-ray right here. And he goes, we'll do your hip. They did spine, hip, knee, and ankles. Okay. He come in. He goes, you don't have any. And I said, I told you I didn't have any. He goes, you can't even tell it looking at your joints that you run. And wow. I said, well, that's good. And I said, well, I put the right food in my body. And I said, you know, my ancestors were here. They ran a lot because that's how they chased down their food, you know. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, he says, you know, they ate vegetables. And I said, I can guarantee you that my grandfather's tribe was Cherokee. They weren't chasing broccoli.
Right.
And he was like, well, but they had, and I said, no. That was the end of that story. And we didn't have that conversation. And she's had, you know, two more replacements since then. And every time he sees me, he just shakes his head. And I'm like, still walking. Don't have any, arthritis. And I have zero inflammatory markers because I had an illness and they were like, they kept drawing my blood and they're like, you know, the CRP and the ESR are kind of inflammatory markers if those two levels are high. Mm-hmm. And they kept drawing them and they're like, I know you have this. I know that this is what's going on. I said, yes, I do too. And they're like, but your inflammatory markers are like at zero. And I said, I don't eat anything inflammatory. I don't do sugar. I don't do bread. I don't do, you know, and they're like, what the hell do you eat? And I said, meat, fat, salt, water. And they're like, oh, and they look at you like you're crazy, but you're the healthy one.
Right.
And so they went ahead and did, you know, my surgery. That was interesting because I had a 7-hour surgery. Mm-hmm. And when I was laying there before surgery, the anesthesiologist comes in and I'm not sure where she was from. She was very hard to understand. Very nice. And she started to hang a bag of lactated ringers, which is sugar, water. Oh, and no. I said, oh, no, no, no. I said, what are you doing? And she says, well, we have to. This is a 7-hour surgery at least. And I said, no. You can hang normal saline, but you're not hanging that. I said, I haven't had sugar in my body. And almost at that point, it was like 30 years.
Right.
Or 31. And she says, well, your blood sugar was only 55 today. And I said, yeah. And I ran 15 miles before I came. And it was 56 when I started. And she was like, well, you'll die. And I said, have you looked at medical books from like 150 years ago? Because blood sugars were 50 to 60. That was common. That was mm-hmm. where the normal was. I said, I don't take in anything that converts to like pure sugar that bumps me up. And she was like, I just can't do your surgery. And I was like, okay, then we're not doing surgery. And my surgeon come in and I was explaining to her and she says, well, will you sign a paper saying that, you know, if your blood sugar drops below, I said, if it drops below 40, you can give me lactated ringers. That's fine. And so the lady come back in and she didn't want to, but she agreed to it. And so went and did surgery, come out. And as soon as I wake up, first thing I did, of course, was looked up at my IV pole. And it was normal saline. And I said, can I, you know, and in surgery, everything's written down. They don't, later on, they put it in a computer. But at that time, your record is sitting right there. And I say, can I see that? Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah. And it was normal saline the whole time. And I knew because I didn't feel crazy from having sugar. Mm-hmm. And when they tested my blood sugar, it was 54. I'd only went down 1 point.
Wow. Which is probably within a margin of error anyways.
Exactly. But in 7.5 hours, yeah, that is all it had dropped. And I had fasted 7 days prior to that surgery. Then I drank bone broth the next day that I had made. And then I fasted again for another 7 days just to speed up the healing. And my doctor up there, when I went back up for all my post-op visits, she's like, I need to have my patients fast. And I said, well, hang on. If they're on the standard American diet or even keto, because when I fasted on keto, I felt like dog, ugh, you know, I said, they're going to feel like garbage. You know, I said, they need to clean up their diet and then worry about that, that fasting aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was pretty impressed. She was like, she was one of those doctors that was willing to go, okay, I hear you. I'm going to keep an eye on this. So yeah, it was pretty interesting.
That's awesome. The human body is amazing at regulating itself without you telling it what to do, isn't it?
I tell patients all the time, you know, you see these just whole tables full of medication and they're like, I have to take this one. I said, yes, to counteract that one and for this side effect. And I said, you do know that the human body will heal itself if you quit blocking it. So I'll go over their medicine. I'm like, oh, you have high blood pressure. Oh, I do. And I said, what's the cause? And they're like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, do you have calcium in your arteries? Do you have bad kidneys that are decreasing the flow? Is it a lung issue? Well, I don't know. They just say I have high blood pressure. And I go, so you're okay with just being treated for the rest of your life and let's not fix it? She goes, well, no. I was like, I'd be asking like maybe for a cardiac calcium score and maybe see if you have pulmonary hypertension or how's your kidney numbers doing, you know? But I'm always like, your body will do the right thing if it's given the right stuff and left alone. Quit blocking everything.
Absolutely. It's crazy the mindset that we've all had at one point. I had the same trust for the medical system and, you know, they know best. They're in a white lab coat and they did sacrifice a lot of time to learn what they learned. And we just assumed that they had learned X, Y, Z, but they really learned ABC.
They did. Yeah. And I have worked with some great, great doctors. And I do respect those, you know, that earned their respect. They're not just going to get it for free. But I have had doctors in the past that I had to remind them. I had one, I literally took his license off his wall and set it in front of him. And I said, what does your license say? He says, practicing medicine. I said, what does my license say? Well, you're a registered nurse. All the time. I'm not even practicing. I am, you know. And I said, that doesn't make me smarter than you, but you can't assume that just because you went to medical school that you know somebody's body better than even they do. Because it just makes me insane when they won't listen to the patient. Or like, say, in a nursing home setting, you see those same people day after day after day. You know them in and out. And you'll see like, oh, there's this shift. Something's changed. Maybe they're getting ready to have a stroke. Maybe that. And they will just treat you like you are the dumbest thing since, you know, a box of Kleenex. And then the person does exactly what you thought was going to happen. And you're like, I tried to tell you, you know. So, yeah, it was very hard. I almost left the medical system during the COVID, not because of COVID or being afraid of it, because I went into nursing because it's like a fireman running into the burning building. Right. You're going to be around that.
Yeah.
My problem was more of the government overreach. I do not like that where somebody can tell you what to do with your body or the keeping people away from families. I did not do that. I was threatened to be fired so many times in the COVID, the nursing home that I was in. They already had COVID. I'm like, and they're going to die from this. They've been married to this person for 60, one of them was 68 years. And I'm like, and that's the person they want to sit with them. They don't know me. They don't care.
Right.
You know, I can be in there with them, but I'm not the same as their loved one. Or if they were on the regular floor, like they've had the surgery or something, we were coming in and out of staff every day testing, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm like, so why can't a family member be tested and wear the same garb and come in? And they're like, well, because Illinois Department of Public Health says they can't. And I said, I don't really give a. And I would test them, make them put on the monkey suit, walk them down because everybody was in isolation anyway.
Right.
I'm like, we're not putting people at risk. This is their choice. And if the person doesn't want to see somebody, that's fine. But we didn't have that, you know, mm-hmm. And it was hard because we didn't lose a lot of patients to COVID, especially in the beginning, because we had a physician who had multiple brain cells clicking, which is nice. And he was willing to do what they now call alternative treatments. And so as soon as somebody would show up positive, he asked me, he's like, what do you know about these? And I'm like, I have family who's been missionaries and those mm-hmm. things are safe. And so that's what he did. And once we did that, we didn't lose people. When we lost people was like a year and a half into them still having that. And it was failure to thrive. People who had never even had the sickness, but they had no family. They didn't see anybody for a year and a half and they just gave up. And I remember coming home and I'm like, I was doing 16-hour shifts because nobody wanted to work the COVID, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 days a week. And I said, I think I'm done. And my husband is very quiet, very mellow. We're opposites. And he goes, huh, I've never known you to be a quitter. And I'm like, I'm not. And I'm like, but I'm beating my head against a wall fighting government regulations when it comes to human lives or humans' choices. And I can't stand it. It's driving mm-hmm. me insane. And he's like, so you're just going to let them win? Because a lot of these other nurses are just willy-nilly letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the only hope that some of these people have because you're willing to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I'll go back.
Tomorrow. So, anyway.
Yes. So, and I did. I mean, and I stayed there till everything was cleared and it was good. And I just, you know, I needed a little bit of a change just because you get so connected to those patients when you see them all the time. And the number of them that we lost from the failure to thrive was way higher than our COVID deaths.
Mm.
And but you never see that on the news.
Right.
That's not on the little ticker, you know, at the bottom of the newscast every night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we had no flu. It was amazing. No flu.
That's crazy. One of the silliest things that I heard during that time was a friend of mine had cancer, unfortunately, and he had to go in to see the oncologist at the hospital, and they had a form. He had to mask up and do the whole, all that stuff.
Sure.
And he gets in there and fills out a questionnaire, or the nurse is actually, you know, mm-hmm. writing down the questionnaire.
What he says, yeah.
And one of the questions was that she asked was, have you been around any sick people? And he says,
I am a sick people.
I'm in a hospital.
Yeah.
Like, hello.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like somebody wrote up those things because they did it everywhere.
Right.
It was dentist, eye doctor, if you could even see a dentist or an eye doctor. One of the things that I saw during that time when I went down to work at the hospital was physicians who would be dressed up. I call them Darth Vader because they had the entire, you know. And I'm like, seriously, you know, but they wouldn't even go into patient rooms. they'd stand at the doorway. And I'm like, how do you do assessment like that? You know, and the first 2 weeks of COVID, when we knew that it was COVID at that point at the nursing home, we didn't even have safety equipment. And I mean, paper masks are useless. I mean, they're for bacteria. They're not for viruses, which is what I kept telling them. I'm like, read the box. Like I did open heart.
Right.
The box said bacteria, you know.
Yeah.
But we didn't have those because we have a governor here that I think he likes upstate maybe better than downstate. Right. And we had to actually go to the state's attorney to be like, hey, we need some of these things to be, you know, handed down. But I truly think all of us that worked that COVID unit, we never got it. And my first patient who passed away, I gave him a little drink of coffee. It's the last thing he asked for. He was a World War II vet. And I put a little straw, you know, and put a little bit in there and he coughed. And I tasted the coffee and I thought, well, there we go. I got it. You know, none of us got it.
Oh, wow.
None of us. Wow. And I have to truly think, I believe in herd immunity, and we used to in the scientific community believe in herd immunity, but I think it was because we were around it every day. And right. I think our immune system's not stupid or we wouldn't have made it as a species.
Right.
But that almost made me get out of there. And like I said, it wasn't for taking care of the patients. I have no problem taking care of, I've had patients with every communicable disease you can name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worried about that because that's part of what you do when you go into healthcare. So,
right.
But I'm glad I stayed because I do get to give this information to patients. And a lot of times they have a caretaker in their home and they'll be listening. And they're like, oh, so if I cut out the breads and I could help myself with it. And I'm like, yeah, you know. And so many people, the internet's really good for people to get information, but, you know, I'll have a patient go, well, I went to the diabetic website and it says to eat oatmeal with brown sugar and an orange juice. And I said, let's look up the carb content of just that meal. And I'm like, if you're not diabetic and you follow that diet, you will be.
Right.
So what's it going to do to you if you already are diabetic? And they're like, but why would they want to do that? And I said, have you not figured out that this is not health care, it's sick care?
Mm-hmm.
Our medicine is set up backwards. And I had a doctor who was from China, and he said to me, and I don't even know if this is true, this is what he told me. He says that in China, they pay so much per month, each household, as long as everybody's well in the house, to their doctor. If somebody is not well, they stop payment to the doctor. So their incentive is to keep you well. Whether that's true or not, that's what he said. And I was like, well, that would make better sense because ours is set up. The sicker you are, the more money they make. Why would they want you well?
Right. Exactly.
You know, and when you tell patients that, I mean, I've had a patient go, oh, I can't believe you're talking like that. You're a nurse. And I said, yeah, I am a patient advocate, even when you don't think you need one. But I'm like, you do need that. And I'm like, you have to look out for yourself, your family, your friends, because it's not, you know, it's not their job. And like I said, back with my grandmother going through the depression and her family came through Auschwitz, she said to me very young that it's not the government's job to take care of you. And any government that wants to take care of all of your needs has an ulterior motive.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, when you say that, boy, I've got kicked off of Facebook. I was in Facebook jail.
Hot buttons.
And I didn't even say exactly what I wanted to say. I just put that out.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that you mentioned about the diabetic recommendations of oatmeal and things like that. I interviewed a young lady for my channel, Ella, and she's 16 years old, has type 1 diabetes, and she's effectively managing it with carnivore diet.
And oh, wow.
So she mentioned some really incredulous stories about diabetes camp that she goes to as a kid.
Uh-huh.
And she said they it is just rampant with just spaghetti and pasta and cookies and ice cream. And they just eat whatever during this camp. And everybody checks their levels and, oh, I need 500 whatever. You know,
yep, I need more units of insulin.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's just insane how this world operates.
So she's been able to probably drop the amount of insulin she has to use daily. Yeah. Good for her. Very smart. Yeah.
And she doesn't have the peaks and the valleys. It's more more
it's
even
just steady. Yeah. Good for her. Boy, she's got the world by the tail.
Right. Yeah. So she's a very sharp young lady for sure.
Yeah. That's good. Good for her.
So where can we find you on the internet, Laura?
So I always tell people to probably follow me on YouTube, which is at Healthy Carnivore. I do have Instagram, which is Healthy and Carnivore. Facebook is Laura P. Russell, but I'm very political, so I'm in jail a lot. So I always say, if you're timid and you don't like the flag, you probably don't want to follow me on Facebook.
That's awesome. Okay. Very cool. I'll make sure to link those in the description below for everybody.
All right. Thank you.
I definitely appreciate your time here, Laura. Should call you a super keto woman or something to that effect. You're one of the longest running people in ketosis that I know. And you're definitely somebody to look up to in terms of diet and health and wellness. And I appreciate you spending this time with me.
I appreciate you for asking me some good questions.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Carnivore Today.
We're one of the most unique podcasts on the web, as we explore not only the carnivore diet, but the misconceptions about it as well along the way. There are so many benefits from this extremely healthy and fulfilling diet. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find the website at carnivoretoday.com. Also find us on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Carnivore Today. See you next time.